Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Sci-Fi and Scream wishes all you human and alien and friends a safe and harmonious Xmas and a prosperous New Year 2014. The Reader. The Reader. The Reader. Kevin Reader is the reader of fantasy fiction with news, views, and reviews of fantasy fiction, old and very new.
The Reader has awoken. Only on Sci-Fi Scream and only on Joy 94.9.
Whose laugh is that? Whose laugh is that? Who else but Kevin Reader? That beautiful laugh. It's the laugh that crosses the universe. I think about that.
Space and time.
That's the one. Space and time. Now, this is the Reader. Kevin Reader's segment. It's him, entirely him, for this special podcast. Because, firstly, it's about catching up on what's been going on, where he's at, what he's been up to, fun he's been having, entertaining himself, and all of Europe by the looks of it. And then, of course, we're going to go into what is happening for 2014.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds like a lot there.
Sounds brilliant. That's so great. Let's get the boring stuff over and done with.
Let's talk about you then.
Yes. What have I been up to? Well, I went through Europe second time. My partner is addicted to traveling. I always make a stop whenever I go to Europe at the Warner Brothers Harry Potter studio tour. I cannot go to Europe without going there. And I was very good this year. I only spent about £300-400
at this.
At the studio.
Yeah.
And I did not buy any of the replica robes, which was very close. I nearly bought the Dumbledore robes, but that would have taken me over the limit. So, but I was very, very good. And then we went traveling through Wales, which I've actually got family in Wales.
Oh, cool.
And anyone who is an avid Doctor Who fan knows that you can't really throw a stone anywhere in Wales without hitting a scene that, you know, is in one of the Doctor Who episodes.
Or Torchwood, or any genre type of TV series, actually.
They go a bit crazy up there. I think I've heard a joke about in the future, they'll be shooting a quarry on Mars, but they'll go to... Okay.
I know what you're getting at, I think.
The whole thing, they'll go to Mars and shoot it to reference a quarry in Wales, because there's a section in... Like, you go to Wales anywhere, and it can be anywhere in the world. Any planet in the world. It's bizarre.
Any planet in the world that we know of what planets look like?
Fantasy planets.
Oh, wow. And what else is happening for you? Has been happening?
Other than that, just finishing my own design projects. I've been nursing a very sick kitten.
What happened to your kitty?
He's throwing an allergy to something. Growing growths on his paw. So they've had to take biopsy down to the bone to make sure the bone hasn't warped. So he's had the cone of shame on for the last 2 weeks. Don't feel sorry for him. No, don't. He sharpened his cone by scraping it against the ground and then rams it into our head when we're sleeping to kind of say, if I have to wear this thing, you know, I'm going to get back at you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really malicious. There's a lot of thought involved.
He was a fastidious groomer. So because he couldn't groom himself, he developed the habit of waking us up in the middle of the night by grooming our beards.
Oh, that we would just start to get really annoying, actually.
We just wake up with this cat tongue just cleaning our beards and then have to try really hard not to throw him across the room because he just woke you up. But yes.
That would be off-putting, actually.
Yes. We've subsequently taught him not to do that.
Yeah. But and now...
You got me on.
The reader segment again,
which I'm excited about. And, you know, I was up all weekend and I just did research and research and research and research. And I found...
I feel bad for you. that.
No, I found so much and I found so many more books that I want to read. But that's not what we're about here today. We're talking about the best books that have been released in 2013. And as we speak, Goodreads is actually currently doing a competition.
Yes.
Well, it's not a competition. You apparently vote for the best fantasy of 2013.
So you don't win anything.
I don't think you win anything. I haven't heard if you win anything. If you do, I may have to go in and double check. But so far, more than 1.2 million votes have been cast.
Wow. So, wow, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge.
Who said reading is out of fashion?
Well, I suppose some it covers everything from e-readers to, you know, physical books. I obviously prefer physical books. But that's a topic for another day. But what I've gone through is I've actually gone through the books that have been nominated for the Best Fantasy of 2013, which I've read most of them. And I've just picked my favorite few of them to go through with us today. Before I go through that, I wanted to discuss what actually makes a good fantasy novel. Now, every year there are about 100, or you know, there are hundreds of fantasy novel books released worldwide, and my personal standard for a good fantasy novel is actually adopted from RUSA, which is our council of librarians that pick the reading list every year. And for those who haven't listened, you can go to episode 181 of the Sci-Fi and Scream podcast, available on iTunes everywhere. The reading list seeks to highlight outstanding genre fiction that merits special attention by general adult readers and the librarians who work with them. So they have standards that they use to actually pick what they find is the best book in a whole lot of genres. And they basically have three rules. One, it is a pleasure to read. That's a fairly important rule. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that I have some books that would technically be classified as young adult fiction. And I wasn't a young adult when I bought them. But they're still good. They're what I call my junk food books. The ones that aren't necessarily good for you as far as, you know, good reading goes. But they still, they satisfy your need for reading. So the first one is it needs to be a pleasure to read. The second one is obviously that it fits within the standards of a fantasy genre or offers a new or unexpected twist on the existing standards. Now, I love when a book it gives me a new twist on fantasy, because a lot of people have said that, you know, fantasy is dead, that we've done everything we possibly can do, that, you know, it's all boring. But the thing is, you can also create hybrids. So you can have urban fantasy, you can have horror fantasy. It's brilliant. Those are the books I like. And then there's the more sort of stricter rule, which is the third one, which is it is well thought out in terms of storyline, character, setting, language, dialogue, tone, pace, detail, description, teaches you something, or it has narrative structure, which is good. So there's a lot of ways you can actually review books. Now, obviously, this is where, as I said, a lot of technical aspects of the author's writing style come into play. And I can be very forgiving. If you give me a book that has great characterization and a great magic system, I can be a little bit forgiving if you're heavy on the detail. And, you know, it takes you a bit to be able to get the storyline going.
Yeah, because sometimes I think that's the thing with fantasy. Yep. There's an awful... In the world that's created, there's a lot to fight through to get to... What was the story about again? And then sometimes I would find myself, and this is probably why I don't read fantasy as much as I should. Sometimes I find myself stopping, marking that page, going back to try and find what the story was about. So that's a problem.
I think anyone that's ever read Robert Jordan will tell you they've done exactly the same thing.
So it becomes a real... I don't want to read for it to become too much of a chore.
Yep.
Because then I'm thinking, well, am I doing this because I'm trying to do an exam or something? Or am I doing this for pleasure?
That is exactly how I feel about George R. Martin's books. Cough.
Oh dear, you have got that terrible Game of Thrones.
Yes, it's just... I can't wheeze. Seem to get rid of it, can
the
I?
The Game of Thrones wheeze.
Yes, that storyline particularly, I feel exactly,
right in
exactly
the chest. About that.
So that's what I use to define a good fantasy novel. So we'll throw ourselves right into my picks for the top fantasy novels of 2013.
Now there will be I will have a drum roll inserted here. 2013 the reader's picks.
All right. So right off the bat, I'll throw with one of my favorite books of the year, which is The Daylight War by Peter V. Brett. Now, this is book 3 of the Demon Cycle, and I'll actually read a little bit off the dust jacket. I'm always really nervous about reading a description of a third or fourth or fifth, or in some instances, the 12th book of a series. So I don't want to spoil too much for people just getting into the series. So I'll just read a little bit from the dust jacket. On the night of the new moon, the demons rise in force, seeking the death of two men, both of whom have the potential to become the fabled deliverer. The man prophesied to reunite the scattered remnants of humanity in a final push to destroy the demon callings once and for all. Arlen Bells was once an ordinary man, but now he's become something more. The warded man, or painted man, depending on what country you're in. Tattooed with eldritch wards so powerful they make him a match for any demon. Arlen denies he is the deliverer at every turn, but the more he tries to be one of the common folk, the more fervently they believe in him. Many would follow him, but Arlen's path threatens to lead him to the dark place he alone can travel to, and from which there may be no returning. Because there is quite a bit more, and it is quite a complex story with very, very good characterization. Essentially, the world, the humanity is stuck in little villages and cities that are warded. So they're protected behind these painted wards. And every night, these demons rise from the ground.
So it's like gated communities.
Yes, exactly. Because at night, if you're not in one of these warded communities, the demons that rise from the ground will essentially kill you. There's no fighting wards at the beginning of the story. There's nothing. People just basically hide. And the thing is, humanity is slowly being whittled to death. And Arlen basically takes the fight back to the demons. It is quite a good storyline. I also like the fact that there are very, very strong female characters. And not just one, but two or three or four. There are very, very well-written female characters in these storylines. They match the male characters. For instance, one of the alternate deliverers is set in a culture that is very loosely based on the Middle East. Female practitioners of magic actually get their magic from the demons' bones. And they are very much the strong female characters that have been manipulating the men all the way from the start of time. Very, very subtly, but they're very, very well-written female characters.
So they obviously have had successes in killing some of the demons to get the bones as well.
Correct. Very well thought out.
I'm still able to think at this time of the day.
Very well done. The desert people, or the desert tribes, are one of the last people in the world that essentially take the fight to the demons every single day. It's part of their culture. But they lose men in hundreds every night.
Right.
So there's like one little town that's absolutely left, but you really should read that yourself.
And what's callings? Sorry.
So the calling.
C-O-R-L-I-N-G-S.
Yes. Callings is another word for the demons, because the concept is that the demons rise from the core of the earth.
Oh, okay.
So they are the callings. And each one's a little bit different. You get a sand calling, or a rock calling, or a tree calling, or a wind calling, or every one is completely different.
Type of calling. Yep. Okay. Excellent.
And they are very, very good. The only bad thing I'll probably say about the storyline is the pacing to a certain degree, and it does it suffers from having huge cast of stories, or a huge cast of characters, so you swap from one character to another, and yes, all the stories intermingle, but just when it's starting to get really good with one character, you'll swap to the other side of the world and you'll be doing something else with another character. And I personally don't like that. I prefer to have my storylines a little bit more enmeshed. But that's just me. Still, fantastic. And I would love if it actually won. Second book. Now, I don't think anyone's surprised to see this book in the list. It is A Memory of Light by Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson. It is book 14 of the Wheel of Time series. And I read a little bit from the Goodreads review for people that don't know the series. Since 1990, when Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time burst into the world with its first book, The Eye of the World, readers have been anticipating the final scenes of this extraordinary saga, which has sold over 40 million copies in 30 languages.
I'm exhausted even thinking about that.
Yep. When Robert Jordan died in 2007, all feared that these concluding scenes would never be written. But working from notes and partials left by Jordan, established fantasy writer Brandon Sanderson, who is also one of my favourite, stepped into the to complete the masterwork with The Gathering Storm, book 12, The Towers of Midnight, book 13, and now he's actually released this one, which is A Memory of Light, book 14. Edited by Jordan's widow, who has actually edited all of Jordan's books, A Memory of Light will delight, enthrall, and deeply satisfy all of Jordan's legions of readers. To be honest, I was just happy to have the storyline end.
For this book, you mean?
It essentially took 23 years for this fantasy series to be finished. And two authors.
I mean, is that... That's remarkable. I don't think I've ever heard of that before. I've heard of that in film, perhaps, but not actually in a book, a series of books that goes on this long for the person to have passed away and then for it to be picked up and...
Leave that one be. A lot of people know about that. It's one of the most well-known fantasy series in the world. And if you have the patience to read it, it is very good.
How long does it take to read, do you think?
A very long time.
That many years? Since
yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
A very long time.
This is the thing with you, with the reader, being the reader, Kevin Reader. I'm just amazed at how people like yourself can do this, can actually endure this as far as reading these books. They are weighty books. They have a lot of material in them and a lot of different aspects to them. They have worlds and goings on that just seem to, you know,
well, you
keep
get everything,
developing and developing.
You get everything from massively, government systems and ways of running countries that, you know, you just learn in your head.
Yeah.
And that's one of the marks of a really good story writer, someone who can keep you engaged the entire way through with all the complexities of their world.
For 23 years.
or longer. I'm sure there'll be someone who's done longer. And you don't feel like it's boring. You... don't forget massive plot points or even the subtle points that come in later that, you know, you didn't know a massive plot had already happened. Terry Goodkind is another version of that. He wrote, I think, a 12-book series with Richard and Kalyn, but I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Yeah, a mark of a good writer is someone that can actually keep you engaged through that long process. So that was Robert Jordan, A Memory of Light. If you haven't read it, I severely suggest that you do, although start with the other 13 books first. All right, so the next one is actually a standalone book by one of my favorite authors in the world, Neil Gaiman. Mm. And it is The Ocean at the End of the Lane. And again, Neil Gaiman's writing is exquisite, is the only way I can explain it. His plot points slowly unfurl. His settings are amazing. His characterizations are absolutely perfect and spot on. There is absolutely nothing negative that I can say about any Neil Gaiman book. He is that good.
I have never heard a bad word.
Exactly.
And he's a cat lover. Can't go wrong. And The Sandman is an important series of graphic novels for our community as well.
I've got the big black leather bound volumes of
them. So he's queer friendly. He certainly has a great depth and wealth of understanding of those different parts of and aspects of our community, and has done it in a fantastical way. I mean, everything he does seems to turn to... Game and gold, really.
He's also not afraid to go into the very dark depths of the humanity.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I do appreciate. So I can say nothing bad about him, but I'll read a bit of the dust jacket for The Ocean at the End of the Lane. Sussex, England. A middle-aged man returns to his childhood home to attend a funeral. Although the house he lived in is long gone, he is drawn to the farm at the end of the road, where, when he was 7, he encountered the most remarkable girl, Letty Hemstock, and her mother and grandmother. Thought about Letty in decades, and yet as he sits by the pond, a pond that she claimed was an ocean, behind the ramshackle old farmhouse, the unremembered past comes flooding back. And it is a past too strange, too frightening, too dangerous to have happened to anyone, let alone a small boy. So I haven't actually read this one yet, but... Neil Gaiman automatically wins points as far as I'm concerned. Again, I would be entirely happy if this one actually did win. It is sitting on my to-read shelf, so I will get to it. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. All right, moving on to number 4. The next one is Blood of Dragons by Robin Hobb. Mm-hmm. Now, I was a huge fan of Hobb's work, especially for the Assassin series and her characterization of the Fool. Because throughout her entire series, she deals with concepts of... sexuality and gender with respect and incredibly subtly, and it's just part of the character. It's not something that's separate. Mm. Yes, you still have those reactions from characters who don't get it, but you also slowly see some of them going, oh, okay, that is just who that person is, and the acceptance of it, which is absolutely, absolutely beautiful.
Very good.
Now,
that's what we like.
Blood of Dragons is book four in the Rainwild Chronicles. And it's basically all about the dragon's survival, which hangs in the balance. The dragons and their dedicated band of keepers have at last found the lost city of Kalsingra. Apologies for my pronunciation. The magical creatures have learned to use their wings and have grown into their regal inheritance. The humans too are changing. As the mystical bonds of their dragons deepen, Thymara, Tats, Rapskull, and even Cedric, the unlikeliest of keepers, have begun transforming beautiful elderling raked with exquisite features that complement and reflect the dragons they serve.
Hmm.
Now again, fantastic characterization. She's very, very in-depth, does not mind going into very, very dark places in her in her writing, and explores the full breadth of emotions when it comes to humanity and humanity's connections with dragons, or, you know, each other or anything like that. It's brilliant.
She's a real favourite amongst convention goers and has a big following here in Australia.
And the thing I absolutely love about her writing is, as you read the series, you notice that she honours the series that have come before and will explain things that you've missed.
Okay.
So characters that appear in one series that you think is totally unrelated to the other ends up being the exact same character.
That's nice. It's a nice continuity, actually. That's clever. Because that happens a lot, perhaps, in maybe, it sounds similar to a good television series.
Yep.
You know, they would cross over and do those sort of things.
And then you find that a character from one series that you think had no relation to this character will suddenly be there visiting them and be confused because they're not referring to that person by the same name. And I'm obviously being very careful not to give too much away.
No.
Because it is a beautiful, beautiful subplot point that you really should read. It is
sounds like stunning. Warehouse 13 / Eureka / Haven. They all
it is exactly the same as that.
Do that kind of thing.
You suddenly realise that the characters are all set in the same universe.
Yeah.
And they relate to each other, and it's
I love that. I think that's cool. She sounds very cool.
Yes, Hobb is absolutely one of my favourite writers. I don't think I have anything negative to say about her. Her writing is fantastic. I'd say the pacing could probably do with a bit of a shove every now and then. The details quite in depth. She really, really goes into her details, but I actually appreciate that with her writing because she has such complexities in her storyline. In this case, the details are actually of benefit, not they don't detract from the story.
Right, it's not like wading through
George R. Martin.
Here we go, you have that bad cough again.
Yes, okay. So the last one I've got, which is for nomination, is The Third Kingdom by Terry Goodkind, which is a Richard and Kaelin novel. Now, I've already reviewed in one of the earlier podcasts the Terry Goodkind series. It was so popular that he cannot actually let the characters go. He has continued to write novels about what happens to them afterwards.
The problem I would have there, does he like these characters? Does he want to do this, or is he just doing this for the fans?
I would like to say that he's doing this because he likes the characters and for the fans. However, I also know that one of the books that he tried to write that had nothing to do with them was not as popular. So
obviously people, this is what they want.
This is what they want. This is, and I mean, the thing is, yes, he's taken these characters and talk about a massive cast. He has huge, absolutely huge cast of fantastic characters, and all of them are in-depth characters. He's written each one with an amazing backstory that intertwines. As I said, I've read 14 of these books now, and I'm still in love with the world. The way the magic works, the way the characters interact with each other. He's very in-depth rationalization and logic, and the philosophy he puts behind each of his characters is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The only bad thing I would have to say is that I really wish he would take the skills that he's learnt and the world building that he's learnt for this one and try something new. Try something beautiful, because I would like to see if he can do what he's done with Richard and Kaelin for new characters, if possible. But however, saying that, I still wouldn't mind if this one won. He's one of my favourite authors. I've got nearly every single one of his books, and I probably will continue to buy every single book that he released. So those are my picks for the best fantasy of 2013. Now, by the time this is actually podcast, we could actually have the winners announced.
Ooh, we'll have to do that as a, what is it, a footnote.
I really hope it's one of the five novels I picked.
Yay.
I would be rather happy.
What do the authors get from this Goodreads pick that's been picked?
A lot of it is about being known, because essentially if you win the best Goodreads for 2013, everyone is going to go out and buy your books. And some of these authors, for instance, Brett, I mean, Robert Jordan's written millions of books, but Peter V. Brett, I don't think has written very many.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone that's not very well renowned, I'm not sure if he has. I haven't actually looked in depth into his series. I've only read the one series of him. If he was to have only written that one series, getting an award like the Goodreads nomination that, as you saw, 1.2 million people have already voted and it's not even the final round yet, it's just the renown that you get. People go out and buy your books. And that can actually be quite a big thing, a make or break for an author. If people don't buy your books, then you end up not being able to write your style of writing. I was reading an article written by Brandon Sanderson, and I won't quote it exactly, but he struggled when he first became an author because he tried to write how he was told he was supposed to write, how his audience wanted his books to be. So he ended up writing these massive books that were just not very good. They were just carbon copies of books that already existed. It was when he basically took a sabbatical and started writing his way that all of a sudden he started getting that renowned. People started buying his books. People started, you know, selling his books. And that's when he's now written... he's written so many fantastic series and so many standalone books that are fantastic, and they're written in his voice, not in the voice of what the publishing industry was trying to tell him he needed to write. Sometimes you need to get that world renown before you can flex your muscles a bit. Things I also wanted to tackle was what I'm looking forward to in 2014. Anyone that reads fantasy series, and as you've heard, Robert Jordan has 14 books, knows that you have to be incredibly patient. Because if you're just starting to read a series and you get to book two and you know, for instance, that he's going to write a full 10-book series on this, you have to be very patient with your authors and let them release. Now, these are three books that were supposed to actually be released in 2013, but unfortunately have not been done. So I thought I'd just highlight them as a footnote. Now, one of them is Words of Radiance by Brandon Sanderson, who finished the Robert Jordan books. This is the Stormlight Archive book 2, sequel to The Way of Kings. Now, this one he's already admitted is going to be a 10-book series. He's taking quite a lot of time to actually write it. And I absolutely love the dust jacket for this one, so I will be reading again. I long for the days before the last desolation, the age before the heralds abandoned us and the knights radiant turned against us. A time when there was still magic in the world and honor in the hearts of men. The world became ours, and we lost it. Nothing, it appears, is more challenging to the soul of men than victory itself. Or was that victory an illusion all along? Did our enemies realize that the harder they fought, the stronger we resisted? Perhaps they saw that the heat and the hammer only make for a better grade of sword. But ignore that steel long enough, and it will eventually rust away. There are form who we watch. The first is the surgeon, forced to put aside healing to become a soldier in the most brutal war of our time. The second is the assassin, a murderer who weeps as he kills. The third is the liar, a young woman who wears a scholar's mantle over the heart of a thief. The last is the high prince, a warlord whose eyes have opened to the past as his thirst for battle wanes. The world can change. Surge binding and shard wielding can return. The magic of ancient days can become ours again. These four people are the key. One of them may redeem us, and one of them will destroy us.
Wow, that's just the dust jacket. Wow, it's very tempting, that, isn't
it? He is brilliant.
Knows how to throw the bait out.
Absolutely. I think I've got every single book he has released. He is fantastic at world building, really detailed, and his magic systems work brilliantly. That's a big thing for me, because if you've got wizards that are too superpowered, or you basically use magic as a get out of jail free card whenever the plot line has, you know, gone awry, that doesn't work for me. Brandon Sanderson really works his characters first. His characters are so important to him, and magic works second. Really, he's got a perfect match for that. Talking about a series that I love the magic for, there is The Broken Eye by Brent Weeks, which is book 3 in The Lightbringer. Now, again, I'll be very careful with this one because I don't want to spoil too much in the plotline for you, so I'll actually read a bit from the first book in this series, which is called The Black Prism. Now, this high fantasy series is set in a world where colour is the foundation for all magic. The idea behind this magic, called chromaturgy, is that drafters harness the wavelength of the colour or colours that they can actually draft, and then transform it into a substance called Luxon, with each colour having its own unique properties. For instance, red Luxon is sticky, gooey, and extremely flammable. Reds often work with subreds or mundane tools to make bombs. Reds, the emotions, are quick-tempered, impulsive, lusty, and love destruction. And the opposite spectrum of that is blue. Blue Luxon is hard, strong, and smooth. It can be used for anything from creation of large structures to armor or bladed weapons. Blues are orderly, inquisitive, and unfailingly rational. Structure, rules, and hierarchy are important to blues. So the way the world works is that drafters pull in a certain light wavelength that they can cast and then cast it into Luxon. Now, again, some drafters can only cast single colors and they're known as monochromes. The more powerful drafters can use two colors, for instance, and they're called bichromes, or more than two colors and they're called polychromes. But they're incredibly, incredibly rare. Luxon is deeply linked with the balance of the world, and this balance needs to be monitored by the Prism. Now, the Prism is the one person in a generation who actually has the ability to harness and use all colors in the spectrum.
Like a prism.
Mm-hmm. And he can actually split light as well. So he can call white light and actually split it into whatever colors he needs. Now, as simple as it sounds so far, the story actually gets incredibly complicated very, very quickly. Add to the mix a full spectrum cast of expertly crafted characters, some of whom are still recovering from the Great Prism War 16 years earlier, when two brothers were actually born with the power of the Prism. Caused absolute chaos. A fatal drawback to chromaturgy that sees most drafters either end their lives ritually or sent mad by the very colours that they wield, and a government system that seems specifically tailored to keep the country teetering on that same brink of madness or utter destruction. Oh, and of course the bad guys, who actually want to see the world descend into madness and summon the old gods. It is very good. The drawback to actually casting this magic is very good because it's essentially so easy to be able to draft colors. The drawback is that the more you draft, the more the Luxon actually invades your body. And the way this happens is that it actually depicts itself in your iris. So the more, if I was blue, the more blue Luxon I'd cast, the more blue would slowly spread into my iris. When it reaches the actual edge of the iris, that's it. That's as much as I can draft. If I draft even a single time more, the halo actually shatters and breaks and goes into the white of the person's eye. As soon as that happens, you essentially start to be sent mad by whatever your color is. So if you're blue, you start to become incredibly logical. And then, you know, everything is just infailingly logical to the point of insanity. Reds become very passionate, very rage infected. But it's more than that. It's the drafters slowly replace parts of their body with the actual Luxon itself. They essentially embed the Luxon within themselves. It's quite creepy. So it is quite a good storyline with a very good twist on the magic. If you haven't read it, absolutely go. All right, I'll try and wrap this up very quickly. I've got one more last to go through. It is actually my favorite, so I will actually save this for an episode of The Normal Reader. But this book has been rumored for the last couple of years, and it is by my favorite author of all time, Patrick Rothfuss. It was The Doors of Stone. It was supposed to be released in 2013. Patrick Rothfuss has very politely said on his blog that he is sick and tired of people asking when the book will be released. It will be released when it's ready. However, it is an exquisite story that is written with the heart of a poet. It is absolutely beautiful. It's essentially this wizard's story, and he tells it all the way from when he was a gifted young man who was part of a traveling troupe of actors. He then, you know, spends years as a near feral orphan in a crime-ridden city. His daringly brazen yet successful bid to enter the legendary school of magic, and finally his life as a fugitive after the murder of a king, all formed this amazingly gripping story which is probably unrivaled in recent literature. I will go that far to say. It is absolutely beautiful. The first book in the story is called The Name of the Wind. If you read any fantasy series or any fantasy book in 2013, ever, it will be this one.
That's, yeah.
It is absolutely beautiful. It is storytelling at its absolute best. I judge every book I read by this one.
You heard it there first. That's serious. That's serious reading.
It is.
That is a serious, yeah.
Brilliant. And I've spent nearly 30 years reading my entire life. And it is the best book I have ever, ever read.
And you're putting a
that's
definitive.
It.
Yep.
That's it. It is the best book I've ever read. As far as I'm concerned, it would win the best fantasy for every single year. Mm. Ever.
That is how serious I am. He's worried. I'm worried.
But yes, that's it. No. That's it. That's all the research I could come up. I hope that covered it quite well.
That's amazing. No, I've got a couple of Patrick Rufus at home that have been sent to me, and I'm terrible. I should read them. I'm terrible.
Above anything else. And the thing I love about his storyline is, yes, it's fantasy. By all means, yes, there's a lot of fantasy in there, but it's not the fantasy that makes his storyline good. It's his storytelling ability.
Okay.
He is an amazing storyteller. It's as simple as that. It's like the storytelling stories of old where you used to sit around the fire and, you know, grandpa would tell you good stories. Some of these stories would be good. Some of them would be bad. And the really good ones would be passed down generations and generations and generations. And it's like the bards of old. That is his storytelling style. You get swept away in the grandeur of the story. It's not about magic. It's not necessarily about the characters. It's not necessarily about the storyline. It's about all of these things combined. They're just perfect. Okay, I'm going to stop talking about this book.
Well, that's what we got you on to do. So that's what you're doing very well indeed. And you've got me really thinking now, thinking about the importance of storytelling and being engaged. And just listening to you describe, and just with the description of some of the dust jackets of some of these new books coming out, just intriguing. Sends me off. And thinking.
Absolutely. And as always on all of these podcasts, I do open it up for any recommendations that anyone listening wants as well. If you've got a particular book you want me to review or read, or you are as passionate as I am about Patrick Rothfuss, pass it on to us. Let us know.
Yeah, you can do that with the Facebook page. Facebook's all right. We can do that. You know, heading into January 2014, when we come back on the live show, we'll be able to interact, obviously, more immediately. So that will be very nice indeed. Now, the big question is...
Hold on a sec. You guys have Twitter as well now, don't you? Oh,
well, yeah. I forgot about that. Uh-oh.
Yes, you can tweet us.
Well, there's tweeting. Tweeting can occur and does. And I still get these emails coming to me saying, you now have blah, blah following you. I'm going, who? Hashtag. I did that the other day. Hashtag to hashtag.
Well done. I've never done that.
No. No, it does bring that immediacy and ability to connect with people that you admire. That's wonderful.
And I like it much more than Facebook.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yep.
Fair enough. There's so much new social media coming up too. There's the new chat face. Have you seen that one?
Oh, you know something I don't. What's chat face?
Well, it's just your face talking, but it's as fast as Facebook messaging. On phones only, so...
I'm going to have to research this.
I don't know. It's like talking Instagram. Talking Instagram, I call it. Look, Kevin, anything else you want to add to this podcast?
I think I've talked enough.
You have, haven't you? It's good, though. It's all good.
I'm making up. I haven't been on for 2 months.
Yeah. It's a busy time of the year.
It is.
As we wind down and get ready for the new onslaught of the new year ahead. So those are the releases coming up. Do you have any idea about...
Rumoured dates?
Rumoured dates, but also any books that you see will be made into films in 2014. Do you know anything about that?
I know that Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn series is actually rumoured to be turned into a game. It'll be on most of the platform games.
Cool.
That is brilliant as well. I haven't heard of any movie releases in my research. They've kind of slowed down on converting books into movies to a certain degree. They seem to be consolidating what they actually want to do with that.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't have put that there.
And also the last one that I actually did look up was The Legend of the Seeker,
which was brilliant.
Hashtag sarcasm. And of course, we all know the George R. R. Martin one.
Yeah.
Which apparently has been renewed for two more seasons. Yes. But no, I've not heard anything exciting in the world of converting into television series. But you've excited me now, and I'm going to have to look into it.
Yeah, I think we both will have to. Because it's got to be something that certainly it would be very involving than how to... translate that all?
Well, there's a very interesting sci-fi book, I believe, that got turned into a movie that neither of us is going to support or do anything about.
Yes, that's right.
And not even mention it. We're just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, no, we're not going to.
Everyone who knows us knows exactly what it is, knows what we're talking about.
Email the distributors and tell them why I'm not going to the preview. They were very kindly sent me an invite, and now I'm going to decline it.
Oh, so they did send you an invite?
They did. You know, it was quite interesting. Yeah, they did. But all right, hey.
Thank you very much for letting me come on.
Thanks, Kevin. The reader is back.
I missed my theme song. Are we going to play my theme song at the beginning?
Yeah, we'll do that. Yay! I'll put it at the beginning. We can put it at the end. It's quite terrifying for some people, but I love it.
I have this urge to have a countdown.
All right, so stay listening to our podcast. And like I said, we'll be back in January 2014. And thanks to Kevin for emerging again.
Thank you.
With his... best of 2013 and highlights hopefully for 2014. That's it. We're calling this podcast. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
See you next year.
Bye.
Sonia and the team of Sci-Fi and Squeam will be back on Joy 94.9 Season 1, January 2014. Check out joy.org.au for more information.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.